Welcome to Farmer Talk Radio. This podcast is focused on engaging internal stakeholders to embed patient engagement in a meaningful way that drive value for business and patients from the 2023 Patients as Partners in Clinical Research Conference. For more information on the Patients as Partners Conference, you can visit patientsaspartnersconference.com or visit theconferenceforum.org. Thank you and enjoy the podcast.
Good afternoon. My name is Ebony Dashiel Ajay, and I'm the head of patient-centered outcome science in clinical development at BioMarin. And I'm excited to be joining you and this esteemed panel today to delve into a topic that is of great interest to everyone, but not many forums really tackle it well. We're here to hold a discussion on how to engage internal stakeholders to effectively and meaningfully embed patient engagement throughout the medical product lifecycle. We're all at this conference because we understand and support the why, that patient engagement infrastructure and missions are critical for advancing access to life-changing medicines that meet unmet needs and transform lives. However, we can probably all agree we're not always as clear about the how. So today, I'm joined by my colleagues, Siobhan, Angie, Angela, and Deborah. And each panelist will walk us through their perspective on how we build, sustain, and advance patient engagement internally. And then we'll dive into targeted questions and discussion. So let's get started. Siobhan.
Thank you, Ebony. Good afternoon, everyone. All right, I like the energy in the room. All right. Full disclosure, this is my first conference since 2019, and I could not be in a better room of people. It's not every day that you get to come and be amongst your community of people who are fully convinced of the impact we can make by engaging patients as partners. And so, really stoked to be here. Yeah. So I'm sure that over these past 2 days, by now, you've had some bright ideas. You're probably really energized. You're like, when I get back, the things I'm going to do. Now, one thing that I know we might also have in common is you go back with your passion and your zeal, and you say, I have a great idea. And you're having a conversation with a colleague, and they say, oh, yeah, I totally buy into, like, patient voice, really important stuff. But then you see sometimes within their yes, there are these little undergoated no's. I'm not so sure. How do we do it? Do we really need to do it? I mean, I believe, but it's going to require me to change a bit. And, you know, I've commiserated with many colleagues over the years, and people say, oh, they're so resistant. They're so resistant. And what I'd like us to do as leaders, as practitioners, is to not label it resistance. Okay? The challenge that I put before us today is to look at this as a change management opportunity. And we don't talk about change management a lot. And if you haven't yet had the opportunity to enrich your own knowledge, there are a lot of great resources available online, probably even in your companies, that talk about change management. If you haven't yet availed yourself of those resources, I encourage you to do so, because what we're really dealing with across hierarchies and functions are very legitimate questions. Why do I need to do this, and why now? How does it fit into my current state of affairs? And also, what things should we not do? So as we think about how we can really embed patient engagement and get our internal stakeholders on board, it is about change management. It's about how do we impact people's minds? How do we impact their hearts? And how do we really move forward and clear the path for people within the organization so they too can get on board in this amazing journey that we're really trying to champion within our organizations? Okay. So in our own organization, we've engaged in an array of activities and delivered resources to really engage internal stakeholders and embed patient engagement. And I'm going to mention just two here that have been foundational for us just to kind of get the conversation started a bit. The first would be the use of strategy and operations frameworks. We use an organizational effectiveness model to frame our efforts within our organization, and we found this to be a very effective way to have communications with senior stakeholders. Okay, it focused both on hard and soft skills, and we were able to look at the current state of our organization. We were able to then frame and align the things we were proposing to do, and then also track our progress and still remain to be done. And it was very accessible, and executives liked it. And then also, we had more than 100 internal meetings, including dozens of one-on-one structured interviews with key leaders. And you say, oh my God, that's a lot of conversations to have. It is, but those perspectives and insights were really important for direction setting. And so as you continue to look at this slide and some of the examples of design, training, communications, and resources, Angie Wheel is now going to share with us more on gaining internal support.
Thank you, Siobhan. I'm also so pleased to be here. Excited as not only a rare disease sufferer, a mother, a carer, but I get to make amplifying the patient voice my job, and there's no greater privilege than that, so I'm glad to be here. So I'm a bit different than some of the groups you've heard of in that I am from a service agency called Lumanity. Did I go the wrong way? Yeah. Thank you. So my job is really to help all my pharma and biotech clients to get the buy-in and to then implement the patient voice throughout the drug development cycle. Obviously, we're all in agreement that that needs to happen, but you have maybe some idea, a very probably good idea, of how often I'm invited in to help gain support from internal stakeholders and how difficult that might have been. So when I became the lead of our Patient Center of Excellence for Lumanity, I thought my job was going to be all about the hows, like you said. How do you implement? How do you find the right patients? How do you get an ad board together? How do you keep them sustained? How do you actually action the insights? My job is still about the why. Why should patients be co-creators in the drug development process? I mean, I know why. I've been a qualitative researcher for 25 years. It's about understanding the motivators, the barriers, so that we can take those away and we can help retention and enrollment and recruitment. It's about understanding all of the experiences that patients have and the needs that they have so that they can be addressed through trial. It's certainly about integrating the patient perspective in trial design endpoints. I pause because that, for me, is one of the hardest challenges that I have. Is saying to people, one size does not fit all. Better efficacy isn't always the best. If you build it, they will come. All myths that need to be debunked. And only if you just involve the patient in helping to design the clinical trial endpoints. And obviously then there's other things. Very importantly, the disconnects between physicians and patients in what would be the optimal treatment for them. So my job is why? And unfortunately or fortunately, I end up in the boardrooms most often saying, this is the value of patient engagement. 50% less time in enrollment. About 61 days saved, $500,000 by not having to add an additional amendment to your trial. Potentially, you're going to have a much higher percentage chance of positive results, 87%. And by the way, I stole this slide from PFMD. So Nick, it's a great slide because I'm not able as an agency to track the return on investment throughout the entire drug cycle. But I have to stand up there and say, it will save you money. Then I get some traction. And then I get to say, and it will save you time, which is money. And then I get to say, it'll actually help you create a product that will get used, which will beat your forecast. But I'm kind of tired of bringing money into it. So, Angela is going to talk about how to get that internal buy-in.
Thanks. Thank you so much, Angie. This is a really important slide. I think this slide really exemplifies why, and it serves as a basis as to why patient engagement is so critical early and systematically. And you would think when I took this job that it's a no-brainer, and I actually considered it to be a no-brainer. I'm like, this is going to be great. I'm super excited about this. Not the reality. I would say that the metrics on Angie's slide actually are quite compelling, and those teams, those internal teams that are working in new disease areas are, you know, they're compelled by those because they're starting from a place of new. They want to understand the patient burden. They want to understand the treatment paradigm. They want to understand where the shortcomings in the current treatment landscape, where the unmet needs along that patient journey odyssey that's limiting optimal care. And so the slide that you just shared actually is quite motivating to these teams. Now, I got to work in a disease area where we had a strong heritage, a strong history, and teams that were able to bring innovative therapies to market without really pausing to speak with the patient. And those teams were, they said, oh, that's really nice, Angela, but what's in it for me? And so that was a really interesting conversation. And we, having done this work for a few years, we actually built some metrics from an internal perspective. So what does our patient-centric ROS trial look like versus a trial that we would run without that patient voice? And these are the metrics that actually help to compel those, I would say, on the sideline teams. One of the examples I like to share is some work we did with the Huntington's patient community on our Generation HD1 clinical trial. That trial was designed and implemented with the patient voice. We really brought that patient in early and systematically, consistently. That trial actually experienced faster site activation, 4 times faster recruitment than other Roche clinical trials in the rare disease space, 2 times faster recruitment than clinical trials in general at Roche. But I think what was really interesting was when we had to halt dose finding in our phase 3 trial and move it to a phase 2 trial, our reputation with the patient community was maintained. They actually worked in partnership with us to help us communicate back to the patient community why this was happening, help us to manage the disappointment. And that is the benefit of bringing in that patient perspective. I will share with you that once we have a motivated team, we have a dedicated team within Roche that works with our internal teams to help bring in that patient voice. And that can happen anywhere along this product life cycle that's on the screen. I will share, though, that the more meaningful patient-centric changes happen at the discovery stage. That's where you have the most flexibility in terms of bringing in that patient perspective. That's where you can have some opportunities to be able to shape your population. The opportunities are from an endpoint perspective, really making critical changes around inclusion, exclusion criteria, as well as your schedule of assessment. I would be remiss if I didn't talk about our Global Patient Network team. This is a team that's housed within our Product Development and Medical Affairs division. And the reason why we are housed there is because that division provides us with the greatest opportunity to really have impact across the product lifecycle, starting with early development all the way to lifecycle management. And our team is made up of global patient partnership leaders that are deeply committed to the patient, deeply committed to making sure that everything that we do within Roche, we do that with the patient voice. And our global patient partnership leaders are actually dedicated to a disease area. And we are embedded within our medical affairs disease area teams. And so when we're bringing in the HCP perspective, we're also bringing in the patient perspective. And we're amplifying that patient perspective across all the work that we're doing within a disease area. Our team actually works closely with our medical teams to identify where are the opportunities to bring in that patient voice to shape the work that we're doing, shape our strategies, shape our plans. And they are the single point of contact for the patient community as well. We're like the internal ambassadors, the internal advocate for the patient voice. One more point before I pass it over to Deborah is that in addition to engaging with our external patient community, Roche also has a caring forum. And this is our internal patient community. These are employees that have raised their hand to say, I'm a patient, I'm a caregiver, I want to be a part of this network, I want to have support within Roche. But the caring also serves as a very interesting opportunity for us to be able to do some early pressure test of our ideas before we take it to the external community. I will share a little bit more about this when we go through some of the questions, but now I'll pass it over to Deborah Howe to talk a little bit about the work that they've done around assessing burden of participation in clinical trials.
Great. Thanks, Angela. So you can go to the next slide. It's okay. Great. So my name is Deborah Howe. I'm Director of Global Patient Recruitment and Engagement at Alexion Rare Disease AstraZeneca. And I'm sharing with you this slide here. You may have attended a session yesterday with Wendy Erler, who's our VP of Patient Experience at Alexion. And she talked about a variety of different frameworks and approaches that we use to embed and cultivate patient engagement at Alexion. And this slide represents one of those frameworks. So it is the patient friction coefficient. I know it's a mouthful. You can call it PFC. We all do. But the PFC is a process by which we bring patients, care partners, sometimes patient advocacy group leadership and staff to the table to talk about clinical trial experience and then also to share a specific protocol and get that patient's feedback and reaction to different aspects of the protocol, and whether that be the schedule of activities, the different procedures in the trial. But based on these interactions, we have just learned so much. So the reason why I'm starting with this sort of very specific framework and process slide or background slide is, one, that we have a process by which we can lean on, learn from, we can lead based on the process, the tools, and the templates that we've developed to support this framework. But it's also so the rest of the organization knows that there is a process in place, there is a framework, and they can lean on and get involved that way. The other reason I wanted to share this slide is, and by the way, I didn't change this slide to be specific to the actual panel today. The culture change was already embedded on the slide, and that's a very much part of our process. We know it's high on our radar. We know we need to work on that adaption and culture change, and I think we'll talk more specifically about that moving forward, but just wanted to highlight some of the framework and the culture change that we're focused on at Alexion.
Thank you all. Oh. You have one more?
No.
Well, I mean, thank you all. I mean, these are great insights. I mean, it just shows how much work we have in all of our organizations that is yet to do. You know, we have a lot that we're doing, but there's a lot of progress that we're trying to make. So we want to enter into some targeted Q&A right now just to delve in a little deeper on key learnings that you all can share with the audience. So just to begin with Chiffon and Angie, you know, as we all know, building patient engagement in an organization requires resources, both financial as well as personnel. So can you just talk a little bit about the essential elements for creating an internal business case to support patient engagement?
Storytelling. The ability to tell a really good story. Again, it's kind of connecting to both the heart and the mind. Emotions really matter. The opportunity to really go in front of your leadership, especially, and to say, hey, we have a problem. We also have an opportunity, and to create a sense of urgency. So simply kind of context setting with people. I've been so thankful for the work from the FDA and all those draft guidances. They have helped us so much internally make the case to stakeholders and to really help them shift their perspectives. When it comes to highlighting opportunities, it's always important to really tie it to the business. A lot of my experience has been in the patient access space when it comes to health economics and outcomes research, so I can talk about everything such as differentiating our products, de-risking our clinical trial operations, increasing launch success, speeding up R&D. I can talk about health technology assessment and potentially added benefit. So the more you can anchor the opportunities to key things happening in the external environment and also the business impact is really powerful. During our roundtable discussion yesterday, there was a gentleman who talked about shame. It was a very interesting point that he made. He's like, talk about what the competitors are doing. You know, shame works. It's true. Shame does work. We call it benchmarking, but it's really shame. use that competitive spirit amongst your senior leadership to really help embed the voice of the patient. Another practical thing to do is look across your organization. I'm sure there are strategic initiatives that typically you can hook patient engagement into. It might be a five-year R&D strategy. That was our key opportunity to really advance patient-focused drug development in our organization. More and more we're talking about sustainability aims, right? ESG, diversity, equity, and inclusion. You can't say you're doing DEI and not be doing patient-focused drug development. In fact, our DE&I internal training references our patient-focused drug development training, and they link to each other because how can you get collective, representative, generalizable input if you're not doing PFDD and you're not doing DE&I? So there are a lot of natural synergies that you should really think about piggybacking onto. Also, what we've talked about here over the past 2 days, it is really complex, but the ability to kind of simplify it into what do we need to learn from patients? You know, how do we collect patient experience data? And what are the near-term benefits and long-term benefits to your organization and also to patients? I mentioned in my opening remarks these more than 100 meetings. It relates to stakeholder management. You know, segmenting your stakeholders across the organization, understanding their concerns, lots of communications. I mean, we've had blogs. I've been on more podcasts than I care to admit internally. Events that we've done, half-day events, lots of guest speakers, working really closely with our global corporate R&D communications. I've never communicated so much in my life to people in my own organization, but it works. It works. It helps you connect to champions. It helps you connect to ambassadors. And people will call you and say, we're doing something over here. Will you come and talk? How does it relate to me? And then lastly, before I transition to Angie, I would say prioritization and pragmatism. We would love to do everything excellently. We aim to do everything excellently. We have great frameworks. We talked about PFMD. They talk about quality patient engagement, how we should do it. When you're working with senior leaders, still make sure you prioritize. Still be prepared to be pragmatic. So those are some early tips.
What she said.
Again, I get to have the opportunity to come in and actually interview internal stakeholders as part of my job. And what I find really surprising is when I ask, why shouldn't patients be co-creators in the drug development cycle? I usually get this strange, like, look. Like, well, I'm not supposed to say anything about that, right? But what I end up hearing when I ask more questions is, I'm afraid I don't exactly know what patient engagement is. I don't know what it's like to live with X disease. I kind of want to find out, but I don't really want to find out. There's the integrity of the study, and will it be compromised? There's a lot of back and forth, again, about I don't have the time now to do everything that we need to do, so how am I going to pause to find the right patient to bring them in to talk to them? So I do use a lot of storytelling. In my job, I get to launch or help to launch a lot of products with a lot of different pharma companies, and I've interviewed a lot of people, and sometimes it just takes that one story of that one person who it just makes the difference. And then my mama always said, use your common sense and use what you've got. So one story, and then I'll pass it back. I was working with a client who was a huge Cubs fan. I'm from Chicago. That's incredibly important that you must be a Cubs fan. But huge, knew everybody on the roster, knew every single person, player, everything. And I had asked the question, why should patients be included in the drug development cycle? And he's like, I don't know. I'm creating a device. Like, what do they know about engineering and devices? And I said, okay, so your job for the next year is to pick out the cleats for the Cubs, but you only get one type. Oh, and by the way, it can't be metal. And that's all you get. How much success do you think you're going to have with molded cleats and all, you know, the different surfaces that you play on? Now, do you only need one in-home peritoneal dialysis device? And should it not have any customization? That's all it took. So it's storytelling, and it's time to listen.
Storytelling, pragmatism, I mean, these are key. And when you think about just patients and your own story, how powerful is it to just describe qualitatively what you need in your life, what you need to improve, exactly how a medicine can help? That's the most powerful collateral that we have internally that we feel has been deprioritized for way too long. But if you integrate that with, of course, return on investment and all the numbers and all the things, put it into the presentation with the business case, then you're more likely to catch the hearts of the viewers than you would just presenting the numbers by themselves, right? So let's take a little bit more time to discuss personnel, resource, and capability building. You know, how do you develop a team with a variety of different capabilities who can embed patient engagement consistently throughout the medical product life cycle? You know, I'll hand it over to Angela and Deborah to speak about that.
Do you want me to take it first?
Please.
It's people, right? It's building a team with the right people who truly believe in patient engagement and are willing to have those hard conversations, debate, pull teams along to want to embed, motivate those teams to want to embed the patient perspective, but then be prepared to be able to deliver on that, right? On the other side, building the relationships with the patient community, having structures in place like patient councils, for example. We also have patients that we have consultative agreements with so we can bring in that patient voice very quickly. And so really for Roche, at the heart of it is having a team that's highly motivated and that's willing to go in and have a good fight if they have to with internal teams that are, you know, on the sidelines or less convinced. So I'll pass it over to Deborah.
Sure. Thank you. Yeah, so our patient experience and patient advocacy team, you know, what Wendy has built that team intentionally with a variety of different backgrounds, skill sets, and geography. So let me explain. So from a background perspective, the people on the team many of them have clinical backgrounds. They're physicians or nurses or other healthcare type of provider backgrounds. Some people on the team have led actual patient advocacy organizations. They've led patient advocacy teams at other organizations and even at CROs. And then we have a number of team members who have actually done some pan-Asian work. And so the geography is so critical to consider for rare disease. So we actually have patient advocacy leads in country, in most major market countries, and that's growing. But it's important to have that in-country knowledge of the disease, the connections to the community in country, and also to speak the language for sure. So that's a little bit about the patient experience, patient advocacy team. For the broader organization, some other things that we've done is really pivot and add and augment our hiring process and really looking for patient centricity behaviors, looking for empathy. So that's not an easy question to ask in an interview. You don't ask someone on a scale of 1 to 10 how much do you empathize today, but you know it when you see it. So that's been a little bit of a pivot and a shift in our organization. So the whole organization understands patient centricity right from the beginning. And the other thing that we've done is we've started embedding in the new hire process. So on either day one or day two, new hires participate in what we call a LEAP session, L-E-A-P, and we go around saying take the leap. But what this is, it's an employee immersive experience where we pick a disease area and we talk about the different aspects of the disease. We talk about different decisions that patient care partners, parents need to make, the HCPs that are involved. And we ask questions in breakout sessions. What would you do if you were the mom of this three-year-old child? Would you enroll that child in a clinical trial? Would you pick this physician over that physician and why? So it really does put new employees in the shoes of our clinical trial communities and the patients that we serve. So really proud of that activity, and that's rolling out more and more globally. What started as kind of a U.S. pilot, I think, is rolling out even more. And then we don't stop at the new hire process. We continue to offer this LEAP framework, targeting different disease areas on the continuum of the employee's career at Alexion. And people really talk about it and really, really are inspired coming out of those types of sessions, and really taking 2 hours of time to participate in that kind of workshop has been really, really rewarding and helps, again, with that culture change and culture build.
Thank you so much. I mean, speaking about the prospective behaviors, you know, being able to make sure you're prospectively planning for building the capabilities in the workforce, that's super helpful. Let's talk a little bit about change management, though, and this is for all of the panelists. You know, what are some approaches that we need to employ to instill commitment-driven behaviors long-term and these types of actions internally as you're trying to carry out these initiatives and make them just long-standing in the organization? Anyone can take that first.
I'll jump in, knowing that I'm not trying to do this from the internal side, but still, one of the things that I found that's really, I guess interesting and has worked well is that sometimes we forget that we can share the data back to our internal stakeholders to make a difference. And I mean the individual data. So you bring the person to life and you tell them, as a result of doing this, you have had this impact on this person. Whether it's the grandfather who can now walk up, you know, 2 flights of stairs without stopping 3 times because of his COPD, or it's some other, you know, put in whatever factor. That's incentive, right? And that's motivation.
Just to build off of that, just in my experience, I think you can talk a lot about it, but giving the experience is going to be really important. And so when I work with internal teams, you know, they're involved in developing the discussion guide that we're going to engage with the patient community. They're involved in helping me to choose who's the right patient advocate to have that engagement with. But then I also bring them to the meeting, and they have that interaction with the patient community. And I have to tell you, so story time on my end. I had a team who was patient-centric, you know, like they wanted to do the right thing. They just didn't want to stop. So they were looking at, I would say, the low-hanging fruit of how they can, you know, almost check that box. And when I brought them the more difficult pieces that were more impactful, it was a lot of, I don't think this is going to work for us. Until I put them in front of a patient advocate who was a former clinical trial participant in our trial to a sister trial. And that participant had an awful experience on our trial. She contemplated quitting our trial. It was so awful. She shared the very limited good, the bad, and the ugly. And I have to tell you, that experience changed every single person on that call. And their North Star was this was this participant, former participant. No one else will have that experience like this person did. And then they took on, they rolled up their sleeves and took on the hard work, because those were the pieces that she said were important for her to have. And I think that is how I approach, I think that's how we approach it, engagement, is making sure that internal teams have that interaction.
Yeah, so just to add on to that, you know, I think we heard yesterday, I think Sarah, one of the keynote speakers from yesterday, talked about different ways different companies are approaching this. And sometimes it's the top-down leadership approach, and sometimes it's sort of a functional team having solutions that are kind of, you know, making them available across the organization. I think at Alexion, we're doing the blend of all of the above. And it really starts with the patient-centricity leaders at the table. And we have high-level leaders in our organization who are affected by rare disease, and they start their meetings that way. Mm-hmm. And then we also have, I'll give an example, little story. We had our 30-year celebration last year at Alexion. And yes, we had cake for us, but we also had a stage full of all of the patients that we serve, and we invited them to celebrate with us and to continue to remind us of why we're here every day. And we do these things on a continuum, and really that's connecting our employees to that patient experience every time. Every time we have a town hall or every time we celebrate, and then in various meetings.
Great points about consistency. I think also if we can make it the default, it makes it harder not to do. So we all have kind of core documents that are part of, for example, R&D. You have your target product value profile. You have your IDPs. The more you can embed those patient considerations into the existing core documents that are part of your research, development, and commercialization processes, it gets a lot harder to skip them, because you can't have huge blank sections of your target product value profile. No one's going to let that go by, right? So the more we can embed it, the more it's going to become the default, and we'll get more consistency. Additionally, how can we incentivize people? So at one point in time, our chief medical officer was giving awards for patient centricity. So if we can look for ways to amplify and reinforce that behavior, and also putting it into people's objectives. If it becomes an objective of a team, of an individual, if someone becomes accountable, it's a lot easier to get those commitments.
Great, great points. Give it up for our panel. In our remaining minutes, we actually want to open it up to the audience. We want this to be interactive. This is not just us throwing things at you, but can we get some reactions, some points, any additional case studies you guys want to highlight? The mics are opened up here, so don't all run at once. But please, let's engage. And when you go to the mic, please state your name and just where you're affiliated, who you're affiliated with.
Hi, my name is Valerie Leishman, and I'm affiliated with Lumanity, a medical communications company. And this question goes to anybody that feels like answering it. Can you speak a little bit about what sort of internal training you've done with your colleagues for patient centricity?
Thank you. I'm really proud of our patient-focused drug development e-learning. In fact, it won a Brandon Hall Gold Award, and it's something that was rolled out to all of our R&D organization. It's 10 modules, but none of them is longer than 5 or 8 minutes, so people can go in and out of it. And it really, it has a nice animated approach, and it allows people to think about, there are two teams trying to develop a drug in lupus, and one kind of does it the old school way, and the other team decides to be a little more patient-focused. What choices will they make? Who will win? And it's really fun, and people sent us the best feedback on that training, and they share it within their global program teams, and it has really made an impact, and we had a really wide cross-functional team help develop that training with us, and you know, we're big fans of it, and it really left an impression on members of our organization. It amplified the efforts so much.
I'll jump in from at Roche. I mean, we, in addition to having global patient partnership leaders that are working in the disease area, we also have an above disease area team that's looking to build capabilities across not only the global patient network, but within our organization. So we have a patient partnership academy with a number of training, you know, patient partnership in a nutshell, all the way to, you know, what the role is and how we bring in the patient perspective in a meaningful way. We also have this is what I'm proud of. I mean, I'm the community of practice lead around bringing in the patient perspective in the R&D space. So building capabilities across our team and, you know, enabling learning sessions within our team. So we invite someone who has tackled a R&D specific topic to share. And then we have an open session where we're sharing ideas across our team to inspire our team then to go in and engage with internal teams. In addition to this work, we also try to find training opportunities within our organization. So we have an R&D academy where new clinical scientists and operation folks come in and are trained. It's kind of like LEAP, you know, it's your onboarding training, and we've incorporated a patient partnership module because we believe that as you would write a protocol to implement a clinical trial, you should be thinking about the patient in the same manner. And so we have a dedicated module. So wherever we have an opportunity to be able to integrate the patient perspective in training opportunities, either within the GPN or outside within the organization, we take that opportunity.
I can add another example. So we also, like Siobhan, we also have embedded goals and measures and metrics when it comes to patient centricity as well as diversity and inclusion. And there's a whole training, you know, that goes along with that on an annual basis. But one thing that we also have is another framework is called STAR, S-T-A-R. It stands for Solutions to Accelerate Results for Patients. The four patients isn't part of it. Don't try to figure it out. but STAR. So the STAR workshop, it's a series of conversations with patients, with care partners, with advocacy leads, and staff, as well as HCPs. So this is trying to understand at the disease level what the journey is, what the diagnostic journey is, which is really important for rare disease because that road is long and hard. But the collection of all the learnings related to this STAR fact book, a STAR workshop, is a STAR fact book. So it's a glorified, you know, 100-page slide set of chock full of information and insights from these patients. And what I love about what Alexion does is we don't put it on a shelf. We don't put it in our marketing team's you know, section of the organization. It's available for any employee, no matter what their role is, on our intranet. And so that's my first go-to when I am asked to support a team where I haven't been in that disease area before. That's my number one go-to place. And I carve out some time, and the things that I learn from these insights it comprised into one data set. So not formal training, but a self-guided educational experience nonetheless.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Annex from AstraZeneca. Wonderful session. I would just like to hear from the panel on how we engage with patients in a meaningful way while still acknowledging that we have different stakeholders that have different targeted needs, and how can we meet those targeted needs while building on the information that we have so we're not overtaxing our patients.
Am I still on? Yeah. So I think, you know, I typically, when I lead some processes, I lead the patient friction coefficient at Alexion. And so when I approach teams who may have not participated in PFC before, first of all, there's a set of early adopters. And these are a lot of times medical writers who come forward and say, I want to incorporate patient insights into this protocol. And whether they're doing that driven and motivated by the regulatory and governmental requirement climate, or whether they're doing it because it's just the right thing to do, it's okay, because we're all coming together and adopting, you know, from a culture change perspective. So I have the early adopters. But to your question, I get I often get the question, and I know that these are people on the fence, because they say, well, so what? Or they say, and they say it kindly, but they also will say, well, what do you do with the insights? And being able to actually share examples of what their peers and other teams have done is amazing. And the questions stop. And it I see people go from I get it to rather quickly, I want it. And so that's been pretty remarkable. And I'll never forget one of our physicians who had completed a patient friction coefficient. We were brainstorming the insights, and then we brainstormed what changes are we going to make in the protocol, what mitigations and what support services do we need to add as a result of all these insights. And I can't believe that our medical monitor was brave enough to change a protocol requirement, and I sit in awe to this day thinking from an access perspective, how many more patients can consider this trial now for this one protocol change. And I'll never forget, he said, I have been treating patients for years and never heard any of these types of insights. And this should be mandatory for all trials. So when you have medical monitors who are new to the process and standing on that platform and sharing it with their peers, it's pretty powerful.
Hi. Oh, is it still on? Yeah. Hi, Ashley Williams from Daiichi Sankyo. So nice to hear all of you today. Many of you represent large top sponsor companies, and many of us in the industry tend to co-develop or partner on the development of new products, especially in different therapeutic areas or indications. I'm wondering, do you have any experience, and if not, any ideas on how companies like yours that have this sort of figured out and built out can help your collaborators or partners bring some of the same findings to their own organization on shared assets and opportunities? And it's probably obvious, maybe some of the AstraZeneca folks, we can talk later. We're big collaborators of yours.
Like, yeah. Step one is being here today, right?
Well, I don't have an answer to that specific question. I perceive it to be about sharing resources and best practices and learning, if that's fair. And if I'm missing the mark, you can tap me on the shoulder later. I'll be editing stage in about 2 minutes. I had mentioned patient-focused medicines development. I believe their PM resource suite is really invaluable. So, for example, if you're thinking about how to have metrics in your own organization for the first time, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. There are so many publicly available resources, but I especially want to call out PFMD. Their resource suite is invaluable, and there are many people who are part of the scientific advisory board and that body that really wants to amplify that work across all sectors. And so we really try to be transparent in making sure those resources are available. So I would suggest tapping into that resource if you haven't already.
I will also jump in here and just share that. I mean, I did work on a study where we were partnering with another company, and I worked actually with that patient engagement counterpart at the company. We shared insights, and we worked collaboratively together, because at the end of the day, the insights supported the success of the trial. I have also worked with teams where I've worked with my clinical colleagues who then shared those insights and the changes that they've made with the partner. So I think that the partnership and how we work with partners from a patient perspective can be different depending on how our partner is set up. So happy to chat a little bit further as well.
If I could just add, as an agency, we do have a lot of experience in helping to guide different companies to do that, and we try to educate ourselves consistently on best practice and make sure that we're on top of not only what just happened at the FDA, but that we're understanding it in a way that you can action it. So I think two agencies might be a good person to rely on in doing so.
I have a question.
I think we're actually at time now.
Oh.
Do we have time to do one
more.
One question from a from a patient.
Of course, please. You are most welcome. All the patients.
I think that we can make time for me. So you know, the question I have. First of all, really thank you all for the work that you're doing. I think it's super valuable to have these discussions. I have a question. I'm not 100% sure how to word it, but storytelling is so important, right? We all know that. We know that storytelling creates empathy. Empathy inspires action. One of the things that I have found as a lived experience advisor is that often patients' stories or people's stories are truncated to serve the needs of the organization, right? This is reality, right? We heard some of you say that to get buy-in from leadership, you would use someone's story, right, to get an emotional reaction so that then they would care about patient engagement. That's just reality, right? And it kind of hurts. It's kind of like, ouch, that sometimes it's important to remember that the people that you are serving have suffered. And even if they are alive, right, even if it worked for them, that their story is one of pain. And that pain and suffering is being used as a tool. So my question is, how do you, as people who care about and know the value of patient engagement, of people's lived experiences, how do you kind of work that out, right, within the organization? How do you meet the need of the organization, but also respect the experiences of the people that you're serving, both internally and then externally? Because my follow-up question is, and if anyone's been on a table with me, they know I always ask, you know, are you compensating your people for their stories?
We are.
Okay, good.
In countries where it's allowed, but yes.
Yes, okay.
Same here.
Great.
I think it's a really important question that you bring up, so thank you, first of all. You're right. I use stories all the time. I try to open the door, but our job is not done then. We have to bring the patient, the person living with the disease, in. And I just told somebody that stopped by my booth, we have to remember that it is the person that sits before us with a disease that has the most important PhD of all. Mm. They have the personal history with the disease. And we don't need to just hear one piece of it. We have to hear the whole story. But that takes time. And if you don't have an open door, you can't do it. But thank you.
Yeah.
I will speak for myself. I have never, ever listened to the lived experience of a patient and then went into any setting and leverage that for business purposes. And I will never do it. You're in a sacred space when someone discloses their lived experience to you. What I have used is that as fuel so that when I go to my leaders, I hold them accountable in an uncompromising, unflinching way. It is important that patients firsthand share those experiences in spaces where the leaders have to see them and have to feel them and have to look them in the eye. That's the value of it.
And that's exactly what I was going to say, to be honest with you. I will not share a lived experience. I will bring you in. So you share your lived experience, and then you tell us what you need. And you hold, and then you hold us accountable. You hold our feet to the fire.
Great. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all.
For more information on the Patients as Partners Conference, editorial, podcasts, or webcasts, visit patientsaspartnersconference.com or theconferenceforum.org.